Blog Talk Radio.
My producer slam, my flow was like bam. Jump on stage and then I dip there.
You the nigga, everybody diss, cause you can't bust this. You got a bad name like Dick Butt Kiss. Welcome to the next level of rhyme flowing, scratching, hooking up beats and hoe catching. Every time I come home, I got 50 messages. I only call back the girls with big, big breasts. Ooh, I got biddies in all the major cities. The safest way to have sex is right between us.
Excuse me as I kiss the sky.
Broadcast live and heard around the world, you are now listening to the most entertaining hour of radio on the planet. It's the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com with your hosts Eric Balkman and Dave Gerzak. The High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour is your home for football analysis from the best fantasy players in the world. And now, because no one else was available, here are Eric Balkman and Dave Gerzak.
Hey, thanks a lot, Rob. Welcome in, everybody, to this October 24th episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com, live from the Papa John Studios. Support for the show is also provided in part by Southwest Airlines, who wants to remind you to reconnect with a fall getaway. You can actually use their low-fare calendar to search available fares by travel date on southwest.com. That's Southwest Airlines, where there's no change fees and bags fly free. Greetings and salutations to all you Balkaholics, Gerzak and addicts listening in the chat room and around the world, or downloading later. I am your host, the slightly above average Eric Balkman. My co-host, the Dizzle, Dave Gerzak, he has the week off, so I will be flying solo tonight. Coming up on tonight's show, I'll have news on a tight end that you should probably get before he comes off short-term IR, and we have a bevy of fantasy trades on Twitter to sort through as well. I don't know what it was this week, but after I was on Fantasy Alarm with Jeff Manns on Tuesday, my Twitter feed had a ton of, hey, would you do this trade? Hey, would you do that trade? So we'll talk a little bit about those coming up at the bottom of the hour. I know with the FFPC Dynasty trade deadline coming up, and I don't know the exact date, but I believe it is coming up within the next week or 2 weeks. I know guys are looking to load up for the stretch run or looking to dump for draft picks and young players for next year. One of those players is in first place and second place in his two FFPC 750 Dinos. And he's also leading the Football Guys Players Championship. His name's Walt Tate, and he's going to be joining me on the show in about 13 minutes here. He's going to talk about what players he hit on this year that helped him get this far to the top, and what players he thinks would make good trade targets. He also had the last 25% of his draft of this team was an auto draft, and it was a game day draft too. So real interesting stuff that we will talk to Walt about coming up in about 12 minutes. Shout out to the chat room right now. We got Chris Holland in there, Henry Muto, Jimmy Wagner, all hanging out. If you guys want to connect with us on there in the chat room, just post your questions right in there. And our mutual friend and producer, Rob, audio engineer Bryce, will get those questions to me tonight. You can also connect on Twitter at HSFFHour, at Eric Balkman, Facebook.com/the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. And, of course, the FedEx inbox is highstakesfantasyfootball@gmail.com. If you want to chime in and talk with me tonight, 347-426-3682. That's 347. Game over. Give me a buzz, and we will chat. We will get to all those questions and fantasy feedback coming up at the end of the show. So it's going to be a little bit different tonight with no Dave. We will have Walt Tate. I'm going to go through the news coming up here in just a second, and then we'll go through these Twitter trades, and that'll be the show. And that's what we'll do this week. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. Let's kick things off and thank Roto World for tonight's rundown. They did a great job with, along with Rob, preparing this. And we'll talk about the game that we all saw last night. The Broncos defeat the San Diego Chargers 35-21. A lot of touchdowns in this game. 8 touchdowns, but not a lot of different players scored. You had Emmanuel Sanders get 3 touchdowns. You had Juwan Thompson get 2 touchdowns. And then, of course, Gates with 2. And the other one was, of course, Keenan Allen getting his first one of the year. The first thing we'll talk about is Ronnie Hillman. Looked awesome again last night, ladies and gentlemen. Ronnie Hillman, 109 rushing yards, 3 catches for 29 yards, and I think it was the Roto World post that said he basically had a chance for a touchdown 5 different times, and got vultured or had it called back by penalty or accidentally stepped out of bounds. So a lot of bad luck for Ronnie Hillman owners last night. But at least you got the yardage totals, and it was a very good fantasy night for Hillman. What I want to talk about is what happens when Monte Ball gets back. Now, you look at the Denver backfield at the start of the year, and a lot of people very high on Monte Ball, first-round pick, second-round pick. He really didn't do anything with the job. You know, he looked bad back there, timid, was not hitting the hole right, was not making correct cuts. Just a lot of bad decisions by Monte Ball, and the fantasy production was not there. Now, Ronnie Hillman, on the other hand, has looked very, very good the last couple weeks. So I think the best that Monte Ball owners can hope for is a timeshare when he does come back to the Broncos. I would not advocate dropping him, because if Hillman does get hurt or if he suddenly gets a case of fumbleitis, which he's been prone to do in the past, also Monte Ball looks pretty good in that offense, and he becomes the lead back again. So don't drop him. At least I wouldn't. And, you know, hope for the best when he comes back. Hopefully he can help you out with the stretch run. And he's actually flex worthy. He certainly won't be an RB1 this year, but I think he still can help you out when it gets to be the fantasy playoffs. What's up with Wes Welker? Kind of a weird night for him as well. Obviously, Peyton Manning, a big night, 286 yards and 3 touchdowns. Wes Welker, 2 catches for 5 yards on 2 targets. So not a very productive night for Welker. Again, he's not the type of guy that I would cut, but he really has to be on your bench until further notice. I mean, there's so many other good receiving options out there that you don't want to put Welker in your lineup and hope that he's able to catch 6, 7, 8 balls like he was doing for most of his career. Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas, Ronnie Hillman, there's a lot of mouths to feed there, and obviously Wes Welker is pretty low on the pecking order. So again, don't drop him unless you're in a real pinch, which I know a lot of you will be coming up next week with the 6 teams on bye, but certainly Welker is not a guy you want to be counting on right now. Brandon Oliver, what are you doing with him going forward? He looked good last night. Oliver, only 36 rushing yards, but he did catch 7 balls for 27 yards. So the yardage wasn't there, but you love those receptions, obviously, and he actually ended up having a pretty good fantasy night for you. I think when Ryan Matthews comes back, it's pretty clear to me that Oliver has carved out a role in this offense, and I think he will be a flex-worthy type guy, but he certainly won't be the RB2 that he has been when Ryan Matthews comes back. So again, you have to prepare yourself. You know, hopefully you caught on with, you know, Trey Mason or Hillman or one of these other running backs that have really stepped up and taken control of their respective running back jobs, because I do foresee a fantasy drop-off in Oliver production coming up in the very near future. Not that that's earth-shattering either. I mean, it pretty much is straightforward. I just got to understand that there's going to be games, more games like this, where unless he gets the catches, there's not going to be a whole lot of fantasy goodness. Keenan Allen, a lot of fantasy goodness with him last night. Is he back to a must-start status as a receiver? 9 catches for 73 yards. He had 13 targets last night, and obviously San Diego was trying to come back in this game after Denver got out to that 21-7 lead. Phillip Rivers did put it in the air 41 times, so Allen had his chances. He looked really good. I mean, the routes were crisp and clean. The hands looked good. He did have that one real bad drop. But Keenan Allen looked really good last night. Now, here's the thing. If you're in a league where you can trade, I think that now is a good time to sell high on him, because if you look at what he's done all season, he's only had 2 really dominant games. This one, then, of course, the one where he had the 10 catches for 135 yards. I think that was September 28th that he did that against Jacksonville. So I'm betting that this was more of an outlier than anything else. And I don't really see him, you know, again, being that receiver that gets 8 to 10 targets every single week. So if you can trade and sell high on him now, I think you should do that. If you are in a format like the FFPC or the Football Guys Players Championship where you cannot trade, then I think he's a guy that you have to look at starting most weeks. But if he's got a bad matchup, I think you might be able to find somebody better on your bench than Keenan Allen. So the other thing I'll move on to, I don't really have anything else to say about this game. I mean, it was a lot of touchdowns, a lot of, I mean, the Juwan Thompson thing was kind of weird, but I think, again, you're not going to count on those 2 touchdowns every week from him. What did he have, 4 carries last night? 7 carries for 24 yards. So, again, 2 touchdowns, kind of an outlier there. I'm just whatever on it. Let's move on and talk about stuff that happened today and going forward. Owen Daniels, out indefinitely after having his knee scoped today. This is according to Jameson Hensley on Twitter. The Ravens are reporting he's going to miss at least a game, but honestly, a knee scope, probably going to be more than a week. He was the main pass catcher with the Kubiak tight end friendly offense, obviously with Dennis Pitta already on the shelf for the season. So now Crockett Gilmore, a third round rookie, is probably going to be the next man up there. And then Kyle Usick, I believe is the name. He was kind of playing an H-back for them. Maybe Marlon Brown get in there and they're catching more passes. I think that for those three guys, if I'm rostering one, I'm picking up Crockett Gilmore. I'm not paying a whole lot for him, but he's worth keeping on your roster if you have the spot this week, just to see what he does. I mean, if he flames out, you can cut him, no problem, and then worry about all the bye week issues you may have coming up for week 9. But right now, I look at Crockett Gilmore as the guy you want. I'm not adding Marlon Brown. I'm not adding Kyle Usick. If I'm pronouncing that right, Rob, am I pronouncing that right? He doesn't know either. Okay, Rob doesn't know either. My apologies to the Usick family if I am mispronouncing it. But anyway, Crockett Gilmore. I bet he got picked up in a few leagues tonight in the FFPC. The Cincinnati Inquirer, Paul Daner, says that he's guessing Tyler Eifert is going to return from the IR designated to return list in Week 11 in time for the big game against the Saints. And God knows the Bengals need all the offensive weapons they can get. What we saw last week was pretty awful. Obviously, with Giovanni Bernard playing a little bit banged up with some of the big hits he was taking, no A.J. Green. You're probably not going to have A.J. Green again this week. I know he got cut in a lot of leagues. I've seen a lot of the waiver reports, and Eifert is out there in a ton of leagues. I think that he's the type of guy that you need to get now and be proactive and get this guy in your team. He was a highly regarded rookie. Remember, rookie tight ends usually aren't that great. He's in his second year. I think with the lack of weapons on that team, he's going to play a big role as soon as he comes back. So if you missed out on him on waivers tonight, make sure on Wednesday you're putting in bids on Tyler Eifert and getting him on your squad. Don't let him be out there. Don't get beat by Tyler Eifert because you didn't pick him up. Find a spot and grab him, especially in a tight end premium format like the FFPC. We have Football Guys Players Championship leader Walt Tate coming up in just a couple of minutes here on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour. Eric Balkman flying solo with you tonight, talking a little Trent Richardson. He's listed as questionable this week against the Steelers. Did not practice any day, and I'm telling you, when a player does not practice at all and they're not, you know, somebody like Calvin Johnson or Adrian Peterson or LeSean McCoy, I think it's safe to say that you cannot count on him. So even if Richardson is healthy, he's not the type of guy you want to count on for fantasy points when he's hurt. I love Ahmad Bradshaw this week. I think he is going to be a fantastic play. Pretty much anybody who has him is going to be playing him. He's got to be in your lineup. And Richardson, again, even if he's active, I'm not playing him. Don't mess around with it. Find somebody else. I mean, unless you're in a pinch, Trent Richardson is not worth the headache. How many times have we said it on this show? He is not worth the headache. Stephen Holder on Twitter reported that about Trent Richardson. He also reported Reggie Wayne ruled out against the Steelers this week. So now you look at, well, okay, if Wayne's out, who's going to be catching passes? I think it obviously comes down to two guys. I think it's Dante Moncrief, and I think it's Hakeem Nicks. Now, what's interesting about the way Chuck Pagano was talking about the replacement for Wayne this week, he didn't really mention a starter. And I think ostensibly you'd assume it'd be Hakeem Nicks. I mean, he was the guy that they brought in as the guy who would be the third receiving option between Wayne and Hilton. And clearly he has not run with that job. Dante Moncrief actually outsnapped him last week. So I think that, again, I'm not playing Moncrief or Knicks this week unless I'm in a real bad situation. But I look at going forward, Moncrief needs to be rostered in every league. I don't think the same can be said about Hakeem Nicks. But Moncrief is a guy, I think that, again, if this Wayne injury happens to linger and Moncrief ends up playing really well, you don't want him on another roster. You want him on yours. Find the spot for Moncrief and make it happen. We have Walt Tate coming up in just 1 minute here on the show. But before we get to him, I'd be remiss if I didn't get your Calvin Johnson injury update of the week. This is from DetroitLions.com. He's going to be questionable, according to Tim Twentyman of the Lions website. He's going to, quote, truly be a game time decision. Johnson did practice all three times this week, but they're all limited. He was cutting and running routes on his sprained ankle, but we don't know if he's going to be playing. Now, what's interesting about this, ladies and gentlemen, is he actually plays at 9:30 in the morning Eastern time. There is a game in London, Detroit and Atlanta. It kicks off at 9:30. So you can actually watch four full games of football on Sunday, 9:30, 1, 4, and then, of course, the 8:30 Sunday night game. So what's interesting about this is we'll know by, 7 in the morning. All the West Coast people, they'll know at 5, excuse me, at 8 in the morning for the East Coast. The West Coast people at 5 in the morning can actually look at the game day inactives for the Lions. And if they want to watch the game, they can stay up and watch it. But they can also just take Calvin Johnson out of their active lineup and just, go back to bed and wait for the early games to start. So what's interesting about that is I'll just say this right now about Calvin Johnson. I think I only own him in one league. He's on the bench in that league right now. And the three receivers I'm playing in front of him are Eric Decker, Andrew Hawkins, Larry Fitzgerald, and there's a fourth one because Calvin was going to be my flex. And I'm drawing a blank on who it is now, but it's like a Pierre Garçon-ish type receiver, whoever that is. Fitz, Decker, Hawkins, and it might be Garçon. I can't remember. It's not important. I think Calvin is better off being on your bench this week. I would not be playing him. And thankfully, you may not even have to make that decision because I think he's going to be declared inactive Sunday morning, bright and early. Check that out. It's going to be a fun day. It's going to be a fun interview tonight as I welcome in tonight's guest onto the show. He's actually played fantasy football for 20-plus years, 7 of those years with the FFPC, and Football Guys with the last 3, in addition to his numerous local leagues. He's cashed every single year in the world-famous FFPC Playoff Challenge, including taking second place the very first year. His wife complains that he watches too much football. However, he not only finds it enjoyable, but it also helps him to form strong opinions for fantasy football backed by hours of quote-unquote research. Well, that research has propelled him to not only first and second place in his two FFPC 750 Dynasty Leagues, it has also propelled him atop more than 7,000 other teams in the Football Guys Players Championship. Please welcome into the show, ladies and gentlemen, Walt Tate. Walt, how are you this Friday evening, man?
Eric, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. The voice is getting a little bit raspy because I normally have Dave Gerzak chiming in here telling me I'm wrong about everything, but now I have you on to tell me I'm wrong about everything. So it's I feel like it's going to work out, man.
Okay, well, great. I hope not to have to correct you very often.
Well, this show is all about correcting me, so you may have to do it once in a while. Before we get to fantasy football, tell our audience a little bit about where you live and what you do for a living there.
Sure. I'm a real estate attorney. I live in Hammond, Louisiana, which is 45 minutes north rather of New Orleans.
And with of course, because Walt is of the lawyer ilk, of the attorney field, we have to play him the LA Law theme on the show. No lawyer comes on this show, no attorney comes on this show without getting the proper theme music. So, of course, Walt, you're going to get the attorney theme music tonight. Very excited to have somebody like you on the show tonight. Let's talk a little bit about that first place Football Guys team. And I look at it, the first thing that stuck out to me is you took Drew Brees with the 3rd pick of the 3rd round in a time when, so-called expert websites and many players are preaching to wait on a quarterback. Why did you take the 2nd one off the board in that draft? And with Brees struggling this year, how are you weighing starting him versus an MVP candidate in Phillip Rivers every single week?
Yeah, well, And let me just mention, although I live in Louisiana, I'm not a real big Saints fan. I'm a Bears fan and have been forever. So I have a feuding rivalry with a lot of the folks around here about that. So initially, you got to understand that it was difficult for me to take Breeze because I don't root for him. So that was tough. But I had kind of targeted a couple of guys at that position that went slightly before I picked. So at that point, I just figured that there was some value with Breeze, who I actually had ranked right behind Peyton Manning, and a lot of that due to the schedule that Breeze is playing and the fact that he plays indoors and some other things, particularly in the weeks of the playoffs and the championship round. Maybe I was putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but I kind of liked his matchups towards the end of the season and in those rounds. So I felt like Matt Forte was my first pick in the draft, not only being a Bears fan, but I'd like to say it was a non-biased pick, and I felt real good about Antonio Brown in the second round. So I thought there was some real value taking Breeze there with the second quarterback off the board falling to the third pick of the third round. Normally, I like to wait a little bit. Had you told me before the draft that I would have gotten Phillip Rivers in the 13th round, I would have bypassed on Breeze in the third and taken someone else. But it's kind of worked out. He's not had the typical Drew Brees season, but there's some time for them to turn it around, and hopefully with Rob Ryan's defense faltering this year, they'll be behind in a good number of games coming up. So maybe he can rack up some cheap points.
And he may not be behind this Sunday night when they take on the Packers in what should be a shootout. I think the total on that game is like 56 right now. So obviously you love Brees this week, but Phillip Rivers also had a really good week this week. How has that shaken out this season? Have you been playing Breeze every week over Rivers, or has Rivers snuck in there over Breeze in a couple of weeks?
Eric, I have so many teams, it's difficult to recall, but this league in particular, I believe the only time that I've played Rivers is the week of the Saints bye. I do have Rivers and Cutler in a number of leagues, so I have flip-flopped the two a little bit depending on the matchups in some other leagues. But I believe Breeze has played every week for me with the exception of their bye.
Talking with Football Guys Players Championship leader Walt Tate here on the HSFF Hour tonight. And, Walt, the other thing, too, when I was looking at your roster, the other thing that really jumped out at me is, you know, we get a lot of players on this show every week, and they're always talking about, you gotta get your guys. I know Dave's going to be upset that I said get your guys, but that's what you got to do off the waiver wire. Spend big early. Make sure you get those big-time guys off the waiver wire right away so you have them on your roster the full season. But you've actually only spent 8 of your 1,000 blind bidding dollars so far this year. Is that by design? Are you saving that cash to make a big score later in the season rather than, you know, trying to make the large splash on the waiver wire? Or has there just not been a guy that you deemed, you know, worthy of breaking the bank for?
Well, you know, Eric, fortunately with this team, I haven't really had the injuries or the replacements, the need for replacing players as in some other leagues. But usually by design, I like to wait until about this time in the season because it always seems right about the midway point is when there's, you know, a big catastrophic injury and somebody is going to be there. And the people that have kind of blown their spending capacity early are not in the running for those players. Initially, going into this week, I had only spent $8, but I stepped out on the Wednesday free agency period and spent over $700 on Trey Mason.
There you go.
Didn't really feel like I needed him, but, here we are. Week 8 has already started with the Thursday night game, so there's only 3 games left or 3 weeks left of a waiver period, so certainly you can't take the money into the playoffs with you. So you might as well, you know, spend it while you got it and not overspend for Mason, but it just felt like at this point there, you know, probably not going to be that many more opportunities to get out there and spend. The approach is a little bit different. You mentioned some of the dynasty leagues. You know, there if you see a player that you think might wind up being a long-term starter and contribute to your lineup, certainly in one of those leagues, I'd spend early there. But typically with these, where it's a season long commitment and you know, there's no keeper or dynasty aspect to it, I try to wait and you know, preserve the money to really be able to, when there's a clear cut guy that's going to afford you an opportunity to replace a starter, use it on those types of individuals.
Hey, Walt, we're going to take a question from the chat room right here. Actually, last week's guest, Chris Holland, who is leading the FFPC main event going into week 7, he wants to know about Matt Forte. Now, you took Matt Forte at the third pick over Jamal Charles, over Adrian Peterson. Obviously, you being a Bears fan, you know Matt Forte, you know, better than a lot of the other running backs, obviously, and maybe more so than a lot of the other football guys, players, championship players. But what was it about Forte at that third pick that you wanted him more than Charles, more than Adrian Peterson coming into the season?
Well, I tell you, with Forte, and watching him, there was no clear-cut backup. You know, they tried to replace or add a backup in years past. They had, Michael Bush last year, the year before, the guy they got from the Cowboys. His name escapes me right now. But anyway, they always looked like they were trying to get a bigger back to take some of the goal line carries and the short yardage carries away from Forte, who's a pretty big back himself. But the real attractive thing is I didn't really like Kadeem Carey. I really thought that Michael Ford out of LSU was going to be the, you know, his primary backup. Even after they drafted Carey, they wound up cutting Ford. I didn't like what I saw out of Carey in the preseason. So I knew Forte was out of all of the backs. LeSean McCoy, I thought you had a little bit of a question mark with Sproles coming over there. Niall Davis was, you know, always a quality player who was going to get some carries for Jamal Charles. Of course, nobody foresaw Adrian Peterson's situation coming, but with Forte, not only is he the primary, you know, bell cow back, there was nobody really to steal carries. I mean, the only time he's coming out of the game is if he needs a rest. But moreover, you know, he was going to be such a focal point in the passing game. And you know, if you look, you know, the majority of the season, he's getting 6, 7, 8 passes a game. And I want to say I saw a stat last week during the Bears-Dolphins game that he was leading the league in receptions. You know, not just for the running back position, but overall, out of all receivers. I don't know if that still holds true, but that's really attractive in a point per reception league to be able to get that type of performance out of your running back.
And while Chris also wanted to follow that up, you took Trent Richardson in the 6th round of this draft as well. Was he a guy that you had targeted there at all? Was he a guy you liked coming into the season, or was that just too much value to pass up?
Well, at that point, I was really high on Victor Cruz, which was obviously a mistake. He wasn't performing all that well even before he got hurt. But at that point, you know, I kind of felt like going quarterback at 3, you know, the next pick had to either be a receiver or a running back. I felt like there was more value with Cruz than the running backs that were available there, maybe. But having said that, I was somewhat high on Richardson. I thought that being in the offseason program would help and assist him within that offense. I was very high on Bradshaw as well. And to tell you the truth, I really preferred Bradshaw to Richardson. But having observed some other drafts up to that point, I thought that Bradshaw would be there later where Richardson would not. So, you know, although I preferred Bradshaw and had started him, over Richardson the majority of the season, I went ahead and took Richardson there because I felt like I had to, with the thinking that I would be able to get Bradshaw a little bit later.
Walt Tate is leading the Football Guys Players Championship. He is tonight's guest on the show. Walt, the team that is leading the FPC right now, the last 5 rounds are actually auto-drafted. One of those auto-drafted players was in the news this week when we found out Marcus Lattimore, according to the Niners, is going to attempt to start practicing this coming Monday, coming off their bye. What happened with the auto-draft, and what do you see foresee for Lattimore this season if he is added to the active roster?
Well, you know, I certainly can't take credit for that. I did like the guy coming out of South Carolina, but he had very serious injuries. There was no telling certainly whether or not he was going to play. But in all honesty, I guess, you know, it's kind of a funny story, but I was in Vegas waiting for the main event drafts. I drafted this on Thursday before the game kicked off. I bought a three-pack of teams, and I had only drafted one to that point. So I had to draft another couple of teams, and actually I never had the opportunity to draft the last one. But I drafted this while my buddy was in the casino in the room, and this draft just drug on and on and on. It seemed like everybody, with the exception of me, was taking the full time off of the clock. So really, after the first 15 picks, I went ahead and grabbed my kicker at 14 and my defense at 15, and I really liked my team. I liked the way that it was shaping up. I got a number of people that I specifically had targeted. So after the 15th pick, I didn't really care who he produced. I figured that the last five guys would only be subject to dropping later to pick up some free agents, and was real happy with the team. So I went down and met my buddy in the casino and told him that, you know, I drafted a team that I really thought had a chance to, you know, score some points this year. Marcus Lattimore may wind up playing. I'm not completely sold on Carlos Hyde as Gore's backup, and Gore is getting old. Of course, the auto draft did produce a couple of, you know, stinkers with Justin Blackmon and what appeared to be a stinker at the time with Josh Gordon. But, you know, of course, he's coming back in week 10 in time for the playoffs.
Right.
So the auto draft did pretty well there, too.
It's one of those things. Sometimes these things sort of have a way of working themselves out, and you still have Gordon and Lattimore on your team, so definitely a couple of big time difference makers, at least for Gordon, we know, coming down the stretch for you. Walt, you look at the players coming into the draft season this year, the players that you had targeted. What are some of the players, and I know you get a bunch of teams, but what are some of the players that you tried to get on a bunch of teams this year that have actually worked out? And what are some of the players that you targeted, but maybe they have not met expectations and have busted out so far? Was there also any particular strategy in as far as player evaluation goes that seemed to pay big dividends in 2014 for you?
Well, you know, the primary player that I had targeted was Forte. I was, in fact, in one of my main event teams, I took Forte with the first pick. Was very high on him. I just thought that he had, you know, fewer question marks than some of the other backs than Charles and McCoy and you know, Peterson having, you know, not catching very many passes. I wasn't really sold on Eddie Lacy, you know, particularly in Green Bay's offense. So one of my strategies year in and year out is the running backs, and it seems like year after year after year, there's fewer and fewer, you know, three down complete backs, you know. So I really wanted Forte there to fill the running back position. It's, in my opinion, there's not a lot of difference when you get past the first or second tier of receivers. You know, the grouping is a lot less than the difference between a you know, first, second, third running back versus a 12th running back. So really like to fill the running back position. I drafted Antonio Brown in the second round because I thought he had a real good shot to produce a lot of points. He wound up being the sixth wide receiver off the board, and I had him higher than a couple of the guys that went before him. So, went there. Victor Cruz was a guy that I had pegged to have had a much better season, particularly with the Akeem Nicks going to Indianapolis. I thought that kind of cleared the path, and with the Giants starting a West Coast offense, I thought that was going to really increase Cruz's reception numbers and that kind of thing. And missed on that one, but I did like a couple of the other guys. I thought that Mark Ingram had some real value for the Saints, as he was going to be their primary back. which it looked like he was until the hand injury. But Steve Smith was another big one for me with Baltimore. I thought he had a lot left in the tank, and I wasn't really concerned with Torrey Smith there in Baltimore. So I thought Steve Smith had an opportunity to kind of resurrect his career. Some of the other guys that I targeted, and I wasn't able to get him in this league, but was Kelvin Benjamin with Carolina. And other than that, I just kind of made some value picks in this position. I did like Martellus Bennett an awful lot, and where I got Greg Olsen, I thought that was some pretty good value. What I kind of do in preparation for the drafts is, you know, kind of come up with you know, the folks that I think are going to have a good year that I'd like to target, but I really do more work and preparation into who I don't want to have on my team, and what I try to do is stay away from those guys. So even if somebody that I've targeted is not available, I still have, you know, a list of guys where I don't want them under any circumstance, whether there's perceived value or not. So, you know, this team more so than a lot of the others that I have was kind of put together by eliminating people that I just didn't want.
I like the strategy. I mean, Steve Smith obviously has been huge this year for you. I want to get back to something real quick about Lacy that you know, you said you did not like him this year. I was actually coming into this season, I was high on Lacy because I just, you know, I saw what he did last year without Rodgers and the fact that they were, you know, gearing up to stop him with eight in the box and he was still just running over him and had a really, really good season. And I thought, boy, if you pair Eddie Lacy with that high-powered Packers offense, I mean, the sky's the limit. And then it came down to draft season, and I was drafting my last team, and I realized, oh, my gosh, I don't have Eddie Lacy on any of my teams. And I ended up getting him at, like, the ninth pick of that draft or whatever. And you know, it obviously – I've been disappointed thus far. But what I want to get back to is a lot of people – when you look at a really, really good offense, like a really potent passing offense, you look at the starting running back in that offense, I just assumed that there'd be a lot of fantasy goodness there for Lacy because he was the lead back there. But clearly, if a team passes and they score their points passing, that doesn't necessarily mean that Lacy is going to be a really valuable first-round running back. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And in looking at it, I think it's just a difference in the offensive approach. You know, that if you look, for example, at the Bears offense, you know, it hasn't produced what it was supposed to produce. You've got, you know, two incredible wide receivers that everybody had, you know, in the top, you know, four or five in the league. You've got a tight end that's been extremely productive this year. And of course you have Forte, but Cutler, despite his problems and some of the turnover issues, you know, Forte is going to be a focal point in that offense, even with all the other pass catchers that they have. Green Bay is a different story. You know, a lot of the success that Lacy had last year, again, was when Rodgers was out. But Rodgers is so accurate and so adept at pushing the ball vertically down the field. And I just question, what role would Lacy really have within the offense? That Green Bay is just not going to split, you know, the pass-run ratio at 50-50. It's not going to happen. And Lacy being a little bit of a bigger back, I just didn't see him catching the ball very much out of the backfield because, you know, Rodgers gets rid of it quickly and goes vertically with the ball. Now, and not to take anything away from Lacy, he did have a phenomenal year last year. I just didn't see him replicating it with Rodgers healthy and pushing the ball down the field.
So hopefully that answers the question for Jimmy Wagner in the chat room, who wanted to know someone you didn't want in Eddie Lacy. Moving on, but Walt Tate is our guest on the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour tonight, leading the Football Guys Players Championship. But you're actually doing very, very well in your Dynasty Leagues, your two FFPC 750 Dynasty Leagues. You're in first in one, second in the other. Are you looking to load up on any veterans here for the remainder of the season with the trade deadline coming up in exchange for some draft picks? Are there any, you know, potential trades that you're bandying about right now in your leagues?
Well, you know, I tell you, I think, again, you know, both of those Dynasty teams, one I drafted, one another guy drafted and abandoned after a year. So, you know, I purchased it. The primary reason that I purchased it is Matt Forte was on the team. So in both of those leagues, incidentally, where I've done okay. I've got Matt Forte in both. The trades that are offered, you know, typically by these guys, it's about 50-50. You can tell that about half the guys in the league are really very, very adept at fantasy football, and the other guys, you know, maybe it played a little more casually. But the trades that are offered, particularly, you know, the ones that I've observed, are extremely one-sided, and I just not a big proponent of trading. You know, there's some that it will happen, but with this, I'm not overly optimistic about the draft picks that are coming out in these things. I'm kind of happy with my teams. Now, I know that players age and that kind of thing, but I kind of look at it with the same approach where if you have an opportunity to pick a guy up that might wind up being a longer-term player. For example, in one of the leagues this year, I got Ronnie Hillman, you know, and I spent a good bit of money to get him. And the reason being, I don't think Monty Ballver, you know, did a whole lot, you know, in the offense, and Hillman had. So, you know, this might be a guy that winds up being the running back in Denver for you know, some appreciable time. So it's I'm not opposed to the trades, but I the ones I've been presented with in any event have not been very equitable.
Walt, we do have time, according to my producer, that we can ask you a couple of emails, email questions that came in. Ironically, they're both from Georgia. The first one, Vince in Norcross, Georgia, says, "Hey, Walt, if Reggie Bush is indeed out this Sunday morning, is Joik Bell a must-start against that Falcons D in your mind? And do you think Theo Riddick would be an okay option as my second flex in my Football Guys Players Championship League? Thanks, man." That's Vince in Norcross, Georgia. For the purposes of this question, if Reggie Bush is out, and I think he's doubtful, so I think he's going to miss, how do you view Joik Bell and Theo Riddick this week against Atlanta in London, Walt?
Well, Atlanta's defense is pretty porous. I think Bell is a definite must start. If Bush isn't playing, I think Bell's going to be the primary guy. I would certainly start him. I don't know if I would start two backs out of the same backfield as a flex. I just think that, you know, there's better options. If for no other reason, you know, you're hoping Bell is going to be the one that's going to get the carries and that sort of thing. If the team's very depleted and you need help at running back, Theo Riddick, I think, has, you know, started to make, you know, somewhat of a contribution. Certainly he's had a couple of decent games where he's pointed a little bit in there. But I would think that Bell would be the primary guy, particularly if you've watched the Lions offense without Calvin Johnson here recently, and even before that when he was playing but clearly injured. Stafford's a different player without Johnson to throw the ball to, or at least take some coverage away. So Atlanta has some problems defensively, particularly in stop and run. So I think you got to play Bell if you have him, particularly if Reggie Bush isn't going to be playing.
I like it, and I agree. It's good stuff. You're in this. I'm just reading this the second email right now for the first time. It has to do with more with college, but you're in the thick of SEC country down there, and you play Dynasty. So
sure.
I'm hoping you can answer this. This is from John in Atlanta. "Have you started looking at the Dynasty rookie draft class of 2015? Curious as to what you thought about my boy Gurley. Any other rookies you're excited about next year? Go Dogs." That's John in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know at what point you start your rookie evaluation for Dynasty purposes. I know I'm in the thick of regular season football right now, so I'm not paying much attention to it. But obviously, you know, I watch college football on Saturdays. What do you think about Todd Gurley for Dynasty purposes? And are there any other potential rookies that could be in the draft this coming April that you do like coming up for your Dynasty rookie drafts, Walt?
Sure. Well, Eric, I am right in the thick of SEC country. I attended Ole Miss for a while. And
good times for you right now, then.
Oh, absolutely. Well, times could be better. The same wife we discussed that complains that I watch football too much. My two children are taking part in their school's fair this weekend, so I actually had to give up a couple of tickets to the Ole Miss game versus LSU here 30 minutes from my house for tomorrow evening. I had to give up a a golf tournament on the Mississippi Gulf Coast in Biloxi at the Hard Rock Casino for tomorrow morning. And I've got to miss the Bears playing the Patriots at noon local time on Sunday because my four-year-old was given a fair performance at noon and my second grader is given one at 1 o'clock. So
You're such a family man, Walt. I really appreciate and admire that about you.
Well, there's you know, some things you can get away with and some things you don't. So when the wife questions you know how you could even consider staying home and watching football with children giving performances, you kind of know what the decision is. Having said that, Gurley is a phenomenal running back. But the University of Georgia produces so many. I mean, you go back and look. I think Herschel Walker probably was the most successful back that came out of Georgia. You had Robert Edwards not too long ago. Of course, no Sean Marino. Robert Edwards tore up his knee in a freak accident playing beach volleyball at the Pro Bowl. But, other than that, it seems like every year Georgia produces a very quality back. They have a great running game. You know, same thing with the quarterbacks, from Stafford and after Stafford, last year and everything else. But you look, Gurley, during the suspension, the replacement comes in last week and runs for a couple hundred yards. So it's just tough to tell. Anyone would have thought watching Mark Ingram, particularly during his Heisman year at Alabama, running against SEC defenses, that he was the real deal. And I think, clearly – that hadn't been the case, and maybe he hadn't had the opportunity with the Saints that he otherwise would have. But I think despite Trent Richardson's recent struggles with the Colts, that he's the better back of the two, and they were in the same backfield. There's just so much talent in the SEC. One guy, that's particularly exciting is Fournette, the true freshman over at LSU. Really seeming to live up to the hype. It's so tough to start looking at fantasy value for the next draft class because typically the better players are going to leave as juniors. So, you just don't know who's going to declare yet and that kind of thing. But I've not started looking at guys. I do try to watch as much college football as possible, which is another one of my wife's complaints. But, I try to tell her that that's research for gambling and fantasy football purposes. But in any event, I am typically familiar with a lot of the players when they start to come out. And a lot of it depends on what team and what situation they're drafted into. Or certainly there were receivers in the draft like Sammy Watkins that I liked a lot better than Kelvin Benjamin, but I didn't target Sammy Watkins in a single draft that I did this year. I got him in a couple of leagues just because I thought there might have been a little bit of value, but particularly in the keeper leagues, I drafted Kelvin Benjamin with my first-round pick in both of them because of the situation that he was going into. I liked Cam Newton, a quarterback, a lot better than I liked E.J. Manuel in Buffalo, and I also liked the situation in that they had just gotten rid of Steven Smith, Brandon LaFell, so I figured outside of Greg Olsen, Benjamin had to be the guy. So, it was a good situation. So I look at the guys, and I'm familiar typically with the top picks, particularly at the skill positions, even some of them that were drafted much later. And it depends on the situation they're going into. I'll tell you, Eric, a guy I'm real high of, and it could be a little bit of a homer pick, but Marquise Wilson for the Bears is presently on injured reserve. He's going to come back in a couple of weeks after the bye. This guy was a seventh-round pick. That they got out of Washington State, Mike Leach ran him off the team, or he had a problem with Mike Leach. But he had led the Pac-12 in a number of receiving categories, and might be Washington State's all-time receiving leader. He's another guy in the same mold as Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffries, and that he's about 6'5", 6'6". He's a good route runner. He has a lot of speed and real good hands. He was slated to be the Bears' third receiver this year. And I was really high on him. I have him in a lot of leagues, and I've got him stashed in a lot of leagues. I think he's going to be very productive when he comes back. The Bears signed Santonio Holmes to fill his role after he broke his collarbone in the preseason, in that he was very productive in the preseason up until that point. Santonio Holmes has not even gotten on the field all that much. And certainly no one has emerged as that third wide receiver for the Bears. But I think with the coverage that Bennett's going to draw coming out of the tight end position, you can't just throw a linebacker on him. And the coverage that Marshall and Jeffrey is going to draw, when you line up with one back in the backfield, no fullback, with three receivers, Marshall, Jeffries, and Marquise Wilson eventually, and Martellus Bennett running routes, I think there's a real opportunity for Marquise Wilson to produce. I was very high on him, you know, not just because he's a Bear, but because I was familiar with what he accomplished at Washington State. And incidentally, I've since given up on him, but in a couple of these dynasty leagues, when they started 3 years ago, I was on Ladarius Green, a tight end coming out of UL Lafayette here locally. And you know, he never really lived up to the hype. I thought he was going to take a little more of the receptions away from Antonio Gates, which hasn't materialized just yet. But he was a real big pick. A lot of the you know, insiders were really pushing Ladarius Green this year to take playing time away from Antonio Gates. That hasn't happened quite yet. You know, having watched him play at ULL and that kind of thing, I think there's a lot to be said about watching the college games and being familiar with the players to help you with the fantasy, particularly in the keeper leagues when they get in draft.
I like the Marquise Wilson call. That's a player a lot of guys forgot about when he got put on the IR, but certainly a name to keep in mind, not only for Dynasty, but for redraft as well. Well, we are running out of time, but I want to ask you our final question that we always ask all our guests. If you could give us one sleeper starter that you like for week 8, and then an early round pick that you'd consider benching this week.
Wow, let's see.
And if they're hurt, like Calvin Johnson or somebody like that, you're not allowed to pick them. That's my own personal affidavit that I'm giving on the air right now.
A sleeper starter.
Obvious ones like last night, Ronnie Hillman, Brandon Oliver. I mean, those are guys that were picked up off the waiver wire, but still were solid RB2 starts. Is there anybody, you know, maybe a sneaky receiver, a sneaky tight end that you think could have a big week this week?
Well, I tell you, I think I like Greg Jennings this week. Playing
like
Tampa with the 28th ranked pass defense. You know, for some reason, a lot of times when you get a matchup like that with a team that two teams that just can't seem to score, Tampa's defense has been pretty porous this year. You might really have an opportunity there for a lot of points to be put up. And Cordarrelle Patterson was a big pick early on this year as well, who just hadn't seemed to live up to the expectations, whether it's the hip injury or not. It looks like Greg Jennings is you know, producing a little bit every week. And I think it's somewhat of a safe start in that, you know, he's averaging about 10 points. So, you know, if you've got him stashed on your bench and, you're not really excited about a guy that's going to put up 10 points, I think he's got a shot this week to you know, maybe go off a little bit. Or break his average.
I like the Jennings pick quite a bit. I actually picked him up in one of my Kentucky leagues that he got dropped in this past week. So I might actually look to Jennings now. What about a bust? Any big name first round, second round guys that you're sitting this week?
Well, Zach Stacy was a pretty early pick. I you know, that's one of the reasons why I jumped out and spent a lot of money on Trey Mason in one of these leagues. It looks like, you know, Mason had the pedigree coming out of Auburn, was a very productive back in college, again, against those SEC defenses. Outside of that, you know, Stacy was healthy last week, was in the game, had no carries, no targets, no receptions. For one play, Mason has come on now the last couple of weeks and just been more impressive than both Cunningham and Stacy. So, you know, it looks like he's, you know, going to at least it's looking as if he could replace these guys and maybe take a bigger piece of the pie in the running back touches for St. Louis. Yeah, you know, another guy I like is Mark Ingram in New Orleans. I liked him early in the year, and you know, with the injuries to Pierre Thomas, and Ingram having played last week, his second game back this week against Green Bay, and what looks like, you know, it could be a shootout. If Ingram continues to run hard, you know, he could be a sleeper for this week as well.
I like it. I like the Ingram call. I think he has a big week Sunday night against the Pack. Hey, Walt, the time has flown by here. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. Lot of excellent points, great analysis. We had some fun as well. Good luck the rest of the way in the Football Guys Players Championship. Congratulations on getting this team to the top, and go Rebels.
Eric, thanks so much. I appreciate you guys having me on. I've enjoyed it. Thanks again.
All right, Walt Tate, he's leading the Football Guys Players Championship heading into week 8. A lot of good stuff there. A lot of good dynasty stuff, too. You know, we typically kind of turn our heads away from dynasty this part of the season, but always good to touch on that whenever we can. So good of Walt to share with us a lot of analysis tonight. I will get to a couple of emails here. We only have about 4 minutes left on the show. The great thing about all your Twitter trades that you sent me, I can just respond to you on Twitter. So I check out the Twitter feed at Eric Baltman for my analysis on those trades. And quite frankly, it really only helps those people anyway. You know, nobody else is making the exact same deal in their league. So let's move on to emails. Jim in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Balky, saw your Twitter feed this week. Are you backing down off your Dixon over Brown take? And it's interesting. I was on the Fantasy Alarm, and I think I touched on this at the top of the show. I was on the Fantasy Alarm show with Jeff Manns on Tuesday night. And then after that, I said, first of all, I didn't really like either Bills running back, but if I had to pick one, I chose Dixon just because Bryce Brown has been inactive all year. I feel like Dixon is going to be the guy to get more touches. And people were like, Bryce Brown's a three-down back. The only reason he was inactive because he can't play special teams, and Dixon could. Now, all that's true, and I certainly don't want to make it seem like I have Dixon this couple, you know, tiers ahead of Brown. That's not the case. I'm just not convinced there's going to be a whole lot of value there. I picked Bryce Brown up in a couple of spots, mostly because I got a bid on Dixon. But again, they play the Jets defense this week. Unless you're in a pinch, you're not playing them against that front seven. The next week they're on bye, and who knows? I mean, Fred Jackson, it's a 4-week injury. Fred Jackson's a pro athlete. Maybe he's back in 3 because he recovers faster. I don't know. But I think that there's too much love for the Bills running backs right now. I will say this. If you're in a pinch this week and you need a home run type play, Bryce Brown is going to – he's much more likely to make that big play, big home run type play. Anthony Dixon is probably going to get the touches, but I don't know if he does much with them. Final email for the show tonight. John in Summerfield, Ohio. Now that Percy will be doling out black eyes in the Jets locker room, how do you feel he's going to do on the field, specifically this week in Buffalo? Can I start him with confidence? That's John in Summerfield, Ohio. You can start him, but I wouldn't have any confidence in it. They're talking about Rex Ryan said that he's going to return kicks, but he's going to be on a snap count. He doesn't know the whole offense yet. So, again, there's got to be better options. I hope you have better options than Percy Harvin this week. I don't own him in any leagues, but he would be on my bench in all of those leagues if I could. I don't know what to expect from him. I mean, maybe he plays 10 snaps, maybe he plays 30, 50. I don't know what it's going to be, and that unknown is what's scaring me right now. And let's be frank. When Harvin was playing a lot of snaps, wasn't doing a ton with it anyway. So bench Percy Harvin this week. That is Balky's words of wisdom. And with that, that is going to do it for our show this week. Dizzle will, of course, be on the show next week. He will make his triumphant return to the Papa John Studios. I will be on Sirius XM 210-87 Tuesday morning at 12:30 with Jeff Manns. And Cablevision subscribers, look for me on the Fantasy Sports Network next week as well. I'm also going to be on the Fantasy Sports Network podcast, which is going to be simulcast on Cablevision tomorrow afternoon. I don't know the exact time, but I'll tweet it out when I get it. So I did a segment with them yesterday, Jeff Feinberg and I. So that was a lot of fun, and that'll be on the air tomorrow. Remember, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time kickoff on Sunday in London. Get those lineups set, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to Walt Tate, Southwest Airlines, Papa John's, FedEx, the FFPC, our producer and mutual friend Rom, audio engineer Bryce. Most importantly, all of you, all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for putting up with an hour straight of Balky. I know it was tough for everyone, but you got through it. We'll see you next week, everybody. Enjoy week 8. Your weekend starts now.
This has been another episode of the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour presented by MyFFPC.com that was broadcast live and heard around the world. Eric and Dave will be back next week with more analysis, interviews, and advice from a guest much smarter than they are. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with you again next week. Put emphasis on the dope. Someone name come up in that conversation. Who's the dopest? Better throw my